All right, guys. Thanks so much for being on the training call today. We're going to go over borrow frequently asked questions. And as you guys are out there networking too, and we open up for questions, if I didn't cover everything that you're being asked, please throw some stuff, ask some questions, because the more questions you guys ask, the more everyone's going to learn anyways. So I'm just going to kind of go through them as I'm going to start off with the most obvious questions that a borrower is going to ask you as you're out and about networking with people, and then kind of get into some more complicated ones as we go down. So again, today we're going to be doing a training on borrower frequently asked questions as you're out there networking with people. First question you're always going to get asked, and this might be kind of obvious, but borrower is going to ask you, you know, what does your company do? Who are you? Something like that. So just to give it to them really straight, we are a commercial brokerage company. We do commercial mortgages. We do all types of temporary, all types of permanent loans for pure commercial property types, so 5-plus units, you know, office, warehouse, any type of commercial property type. And then we do all temporary and permanent loans for 1-to-4-unit investment properties. And investment is the key word there. And you're going to have to explain this to real estate professionals as you're out there. Most of the experienced ones will already understand. But some of the new real estate investors will not actually realize that on a if it's a 1-to-4 unit and they're purely buying it just for investment purposes, they never plan to live there. Some of them don't even realize that that actually is a commercial mortgage. It's not a residential mortgage. A residential mortgage is when you're buying a home and you're personally going to live in there. So just let them know we do all types of temporary, all types of permanent for all commercial property types and for 1-to-4 unit investment properties. That is single family residence, condo. It could be an office condo or just an actual condo that's an off investment property, townhome, 2-unit, 3-unit, 4-unit. That's when I say 1-to-4 unit, that's what I mean. All those property types are included there. You're going to have, once you explain to them, we're brokers, we're not direct lenders. We do work with 100 lenders nationwide. It's just because we do some, you know, we do all types of temporary and all types of permanent, and because we do nationwide. So you know, there are certain deals that are very good to go to a nationwide lender, and there's certain deals where just based on the deal, and you guys will learn this from experience, you really need to go to a local niche lender, a lender that's very close to the property that understands the town, the area, and can get it done, you know, more efficiently and quickly. So it really just depends on the deal, and that's why we work with so many lenders if anyone wants to ask you that. So, you know, once you explain to the real estate investor or the small business owner or anyone what you do, you may have a real estate investor that says, well, you know, why should I work with you guys? Why should I work with you guys and not go direct to a lender? Well, if the real estate investor can go direct to a lender, great. That's fine. You know, their profession is to be a real estate investor, run their real estate business. They're not continuously in the lending profession all day long, so there's only so much they can do with shopping of their loan and evaluating a deal. We have all the lenders that can do their deal at our fingertips, so it's obviously a service we provide. You know, I have 10 lenders that invest in multifamily properties, so I can quickly get them 10 quotes on rates and terms if they give me, of course, some general information about the property. So we can, you know, quickly compare them. Here's the best lender to go to. You know, and there's so many lenders out there. Besides banks, obviously borrowers know about banks. They can physically walk into a bank. Although there are some limited service banks, like I keep mentioning, that we do work with that don't have physical locations throughout the United States. BOFI is one of them. We're going to speak into BOFI next week. They are a federal bank. They specialize in multifamily housing. Great, great interest rates, but they don't have physical locations throughout the country, so the borrower wouldn't know about BOFI. BOFI does not advertise to direct borrowers. They advertise to commercial brokerage shops like us, so we can go out there and find them, the borrowers, and do all the legwork for them. It's just a much more efficient way for them to bring in business, use a large brokerage shop instead of trying to advertise retail is very expensive. So all these lenders we speak to every week, that's not their business model. They advertise to brokerage shops and have the lender, the brokers go find the borrowers for them. So that is the key in working with us. We're going to always make sure we get you the best rates and terms. Yes, you have to pay us a broker fee at the end. We don't work for free, but we're going to get you the best rate and terms. We're also we are just like a full encompassing brokerage shop. We're going to do everything to close their deal. Most brokers are not involved in a transaction as much as we are. You know, the lender's always going to order the appraisal, but I'll always be the one handling their title insurance, updating their property insurance, dealing with their realtor, dealing with their lawyer. Literally, they can wipe their hands clean of the deal once they get me the documents I need, and I take over and do everything. I just had a borrower who needed to close a hard money loan here in Philadelphia where I'm located in like 9 days. He called me Tuesday and was like, I need to close in 9 days. And I was like, oh, God, you know, but I know all his contacts. We've already worked together, and I'm taking over everything for him. And he didn't even need to go to me. He didn't need to come back to me a second time. He knows all the hard money lenders really out there. He is an experienced real estate investor. He did it because he actually is an engineer full-time. He has a full-time job. He doesn't have time to go out there and shop and figure out what the best rate is. Even though he knows who the lenders are, he doesn't have time to properly package up his whole package, to get everything with his property insurance correct, title, everyone involved in insurance. He doesn't have time. So I did such a great job for him the first time that, of course, you know, he came back. And that's really the full service we offer too. You know, if you are a very experienced real estate investor, you need to focus on your profession. Lending is not your profession. So that is why they should use us. We also are going to know, you know, a borrower may go direct to a lender, and the lender says, hey, this deal seems really great. This looks perfect, like it fits in our wheelhouse. And then the file gets in the underwriting, and for some reason it dies. You know, the loan rep at the lender's job, the loan reps there that work directly for them, their job is to bring in deals, 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 deals. They're not underwriters. They typically are the yes, 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 we can do this people. Once it gets to underwriting, they're the no, no, no people. You know, oh, hey, this, I know all the programs out there so well, you know, I can tell them, you know, this is going to end up dying with this lender here. You know, I already know that, so we're not going to go there. So it's just our expertise and our service. That's why I use a very experienced brokerage company like us. Next question you're going to get asked right off the bat, and you guys are going to quickly get annoyed at this question that I put in your head. But borrowers are always going to ask you, what's your interest rate? You know, they're going to say, what's my rate or what's your rate? What's your interest rate? And you have to, you know, explain to them real quick. It's not our interest rate. Again, we're not a direct lender. We just explained to you who we were. It's the interest rates that are out there in the marketplace. But before I can give you even a range of interest rates, I need some general information from you. I need to know, what are you even trying to do? You know, are you looking to buy a stabilized property, or are you looking to buy a vacant property and you're going to stabilize it? Those are two very different transactions, come with two very, very different rates and terms. So, you know, we can give them some general terms, but, you know, interest rate is always determined by the borrower's FICO. So, again, you don't even know where their FICO scores are, so you have to ask them, where are your FICO scores? And also the cash flow that's coming off the property. I need an income and expense report, current year to date, previous 2 years. There's things I need from the borrower to be able to tell them what their interest rate's going to be. And it's not me that's determining their interest rate. I'm simply putting these documents together and giving them to the lender. The lender's going to come back and tell me, this is our interest rate, you know? So when people ask you, what's my rate, we can definitely give them a little bit of a range, but they just don't understand that's not how commercial works. It's you know, kind of an ignorant question to ask, but they don't know. You know, we need to know, what are your FICO scores? What are your personal, you know, tax returns look like? What is the property? How much is that cash flowing? That is how rates are determined, and we need that information to give to a direct lender for them actually to give us a final interest rate. But again, if someone has a loan scenario, you get me on the phone with them, and I can still give them a range of what they're looking at if they tell me what to do, or if they tell me, sorry, what they're looking to do. Next question they're going to ask you, how much down money do I need on a deal? So certain property types do come with certain associated LTVs. Multifamily housing is the easiest financing to get nationwide, and that typically always comes at a 75% LTV. We do have lenders that will go up to an 80% LTV if the loan amount is going to be over $1 million. So it has to be the loan amount. The purchase price, of course, needs to be over $1 million, but once you would do the purchase price times 0.75, that loan amount actually has to be over $1 million too. So that's the catch. But typically nationwide, and I always have to speak in general because we work with so many lenders. So when you are speaking to borrowers out there too, just tell them in general, because we do work with so many lenders, here are, you know, the rates, or here's how it works out there in the commercial real estate lending space. So multifamily housing typically always comes with a 70% LTV. Most all other commercial property types typically always come at a 70% LTV. Multifamily housing is typically always the highest, like I told you, 75. If the loan amount's over $1 million, it's 80. But standard LTVs on commercial property types are really 70%. 30% down is really what you always need. You know, if it's a 1-4 unit investment property, we do have lenders that will go up to 75% as well on a permanent financing deal. And those LTVs I just gave you guys were for permanent financing, meaning the property must be fully rehabbed and performing, cash flowing. If someone is trying to buy a property that is vacant, those LTVs are much different, and I'll go over those real quick with you. But I do want you guys to actually, I want to touch on this real quick. Borrowers sometimes don't understand, and this is really just common sense when it comes down to it. If you are looking to get into a permanent financing loan, and permanent financing loans are always the best amortization, the best interest rates, those are the best terms you're always going to get, the property has to be cash flowing. If the property, I got a loan submission today from someone that wants to buy a warehouse, it's not producing any money, and they're looking for like a 4 or 5% 20-year AM, something crazy. So I had to call the bar and explain to them, look, I understand your FICO is great. I don't know anything about your tax returns, but your FICO here is like 750, but you are buying a property that is vacant. It's not producing any income. So in commercial, it's not just about the bar, it's about the property. Nobody's going to give you a permanent financing loan on that until that property starts producing substantial income and has a track record of it producing income as well. So just always let borrowers know that if they're trying to, you know, refinance or refi cash out, especially refi cash out or even refinance, they're trying to get into any type of permanent loan, the property has to be income producing. So we went through down money that's associated with permanent financing. Temporary financing is much different. If somebody is looking for a bridge loan, like just they have to buy a property very, very quick, and bridge loans really get capped at like a 65% LTV. So sometimes the reason people go into bridge loans is they either need to buy a property very quick, maybe it is performing actually, maybe it is actually producing income, but they just don't have the time to wait for permanent financing. Lenders out there advertise 65 to 70% LTV on bridge loans, but I can tell you it always gets cut down to 65% LTV. So just tell them they're really looking at a 65% LTV, which means they need to come with 35% of the down money, plus they need to be liquid for all their closing costs. Their only upfront fee is an appraisal, but they're also going to have a brokerage fee if they're working with us, a lender fee, and title insurance. Those are always your standard closing costs on a deal. So now if they're looking to actually do a rehab loan, like they want to buy a vacant property and fix up and flip it, or fix it and hold on to it, doesn't matter. 1-4 units rehabs are done much different than commercial rehabs. So typically with 1-4 units in that property type we went over earlier, those are much simpler renovations. They're much easier. Lenders will typically actually lend up to 65% of the ARV, the after repair value. That's the max loan amount you're going to get. There's all tricky ways to word this, but typically on a 1-4 unit renovation, the borrower needs to come with 20% down of the purchase price. So the lender will finance 80% of the purchase price. Then the lender will also finance all the rehab, but that is done in draws. You guys need to be aware of this. All renovation loans are done in draws, which means the borrower has to be liquid for more than they realize. But the way the draws work on a renovation loan is the borrower has to start the renovations first with their own funds. Then the lender reimburses them. So, for example, let's say that this borrower has $50,000 for renovations, and it's already been decided with the lender that they're going to do 5 draws. And each draw is going to be for $10,000. So the borrower has to be liquid for that initial $10,000 to start those renovations, pay the contractor so the contractor can buy their materials and stuff. And then they're going to send all their invoices and everything to the lender. The lender is going to come out and do a site inspection to make sure the work was done properly and everything. And then once they verify that it was done, they'll wire the $10,000 to the borrower's account. And then they have to use that 10K again to start their next phase of renovation. So they still will cover all the renovations, but the borrower does have to start the renovations on their own. So that's how that works with 1 to 4 unit renovations and down money. So just always remember too, it's, you know, rehab loans, any fix and flip, any property someone is buying that is not cash flowing, lenders have higher post-closing liquidity requirements, which meaning they have to have at least 6 months of mortgage payments on hand, interest-only mortgage payments, because the lender wants to know, how are we getting paid? How are you going to pay us every month? Because, you know, if you're a real estate investor, again, you may not be showing any income on your tax returns. So if you personally are not saying that you have any income to us that you can prove, and obviously the property is vacant, it's not producing any income, how do we know we're going to get our interest-only payments? And typically what the hard money lenders will do is just ask for like 2 months of bank statements. They just want to see the 6 months of mortgage statements in cash in a bank account under that borrower's name or their company's name, and they're typically okay with that. And again, borrower needs to be liquid for broker fee, lender fee, and title insurance, which will be brought to closing. Commercial renovations are much different. They're always a loan-to-cost scenario, LTC. Lenders don't lend off of an ARV when it comes to a commercial renovation. It's just a much different process. It's a much more complicated deal. So in a commercial renovation, always just remember the 70-30 rule. There are some lenders that will go a little higher on commercial renovations. But I like to give borrowers just good rules of thumb, and again, just speak to them in general. On any commercial renovation, so a multifamily, a warehouse, a self-storage building, whatever the commercial property type is, the lender will typically finance 70% of the total project cost, and total project cost would be purchase plus the renovation cost. And a borrower needs to come with 30% of the total project cost, plus they need to be liquid for their closing costs. Plus, they need to have at least 6 months of post-closing liquidity on hand. And it may even be more than that if it's a large renovation, it's going to take them some time. Large renovations sometimes can take over a year to get done. So you have to prove to the lender, how are you going to make these interest-only payments and pay them while this renovation is going on, because the property, again, is not producing money at that time. So, you know, on commercial renovations, that it's, you know, you have to be experienced. You have to have experience. You have to know what you're doing. You have to be very liquid. No one's going to just come in and lend you money and you have no cash on hand on a commercial renovation. But they're not even going to do it on a 1 to 4 unit renovation, but definitely not commercial. So those are just the associated LTVs, but that's kind of the answer to how much down money do I need on a deal. Typical regular commercial LTVs are typically a 70% LTV on property types. On multifamily units, lenders do go up to 75%, and we do have some lenders on the 1 to 4 unit deals. Again, if it's a permanent financing deal, that property is cash flowing, that will go up to 75% as well. Okay. So, and that was a little long, but next question. Can I borrow the down money from a friend? So you're going to have, I kind of skipped one here. You're going to have people that want to purchase a property, but they don't have any down money. So, you know, I always explain to people, if anyone could purchase commercial real estate with no down money, I would own every single property, commercial property in the United States. I would have started doing this 6 years ago when I got involved in this business and just bought every property. It doesn't work like that. Obviously, if it was an easy business to get into and it didn't take money, everyone would own commercial real estate. Again, standard always 30% down on a property. So then the borrower may come to their senses and say, well, I don't actually have any down money, but can I borrow the down money from a friend? It just depends on the transaction. In general, that answer is kind of no. You know, if it's somebody else's down money, it's their deal then. You know, we always need to source and season typically where the down money is coming from. Banks are crazy with that. They want to know exactly where the down money is coming from. They'll ask for 6 months of bank statements, as many as they want to ask for, to prove where that down money is coming from. What they could do is, you know, why don't you and the friend create an LLC together, and then I could easily track where that down money is coming from, because you guys are a partnership. So if it came from your friend, that's fine, you know. That being said, there definitely are stated lenders out there like the Velocities, the Athos Capitals. We've had phone calls with them, even some of our hard money lenders that don't heavily source and season funds. So they don't really care where the down money is coming from. And And that's how you really know commercial lending is coming back, because just depending on the market, when lenders' requirements start getting very loose like that, that they just want to deploy the capital, you know? So like a Velocity and Access Capital, they just require one month of bank statement before closing to prove that, of course, the borrower has the down money, because, you know, why would they be working on the deal if the borrower doesn't have it? So it is possible to borrow down money. Again, you know, our Velocity, our Access Capital, they do allow seller assists, and they do allow seller assist and seller second. So a seller assist is basically the seller could help the borrower, typically with 3% of the down money. The seller could give it to them. A seller second is like a CLTV. It typically can't go past a 80% CLTV, and that's just, you know, the combined LTVs of the lender's loan plus the loan. Typically it's from the seller or the other party, just can't surpass 80% LTV based off the current value of the property. So we went over that a couple weeks ago with Velocity. But yes, in some circumstances, the borrower can borrow the down money from a friend or a family member or somebody, but that's not going to be a bank loan if that happens. Banks are not okay with that. So it just has to be that kind of lender that's going to be very loose with sourcing and seasoning their funds. It just depends on the lender. What will my closing costs be? So you can, I can break down someone's closing costs to them very quickly, just from doing this so long. I mean, a residential appraisal is typically somewhere around $500. A commercial appraisal is somewhere around $3,000, give or take, actually. So I've seen them be less. I've seen them be more. It just depends on the property size. When I say residential appraisal, again, I know we do commercial deals, but on a 1-4 unit, even if it's an investment property deal, still a residential appraiser is the one that comes out and does that appraisal, just so everyone knows. So they typically charge around $500. The borrower just pays that to them directly. It has nothing to do with us. Same thing with, you know, the commercial appraisal. But your standard closing costs on any loan, appraisal, then you have broker fee if you're working with a brokerage company like us, lender fee, and title insurance. That's it. You know, appraisal is always paid up front, so you always pay that up front. Your other closing costs, you always pay at closing. So you always pay your brokerage fee, lender fee, and your title insurance fee at closing. So if for some reason the deal fell apart, they would not be responsible for those three other closing costs. They would not get their appraisal money back. The appraiser has done their job that was already paid for. So standard closing costs, you just mention them to them. Like I said, again, appraisal, broker fee, lender fee, title insurance. But I can break down someone's closing costs to them. You know, if I know some things about the deal, if I know what the loan amount's going to be and stuff like that, obviously 2 points based off the loan amount, say it's a loan amount of $100,000, I would just break down to them. Lender fee, if that's 2 points, $2,000. Broker fee, $2,000, if that's 2 points. Title insurance, we're actually going to do a training call with Chicago Title soon about title insurance. Title insurance is really based off of the fees are really based off the loan amount. I always just budget like $3,000 for title insurance. I've seen it be higher sometimes. I've seen it be lower, and it, again, just depends on the loan amount. I'm not sure how title figures out what the fee is, but I can tell you title insurance is regulated in most states. So it's the same fee no matter where you go, what title company you use in most states. There are some states, though, that are unregulated, but we'll talk to Chicago Title in probably in a couple weeks so they can explain all that. I can always break down their closing costs, but one thing you can explain to them too, points are always based off the loan amount. They're always based off the loan amount, and they should usually know that. Do you offer 100% financing? We don't work with any lenders that offer 100% financing. I don't know any lenders that offer 100% financing. There are situations where we actually did connect with a good lender recently that does transactional funding. And what that is, basically, some of the real estate investors you guys are going to meet out there are actually wholesalers. What that means is they will find a property that is already for sale. They're not a realtor, but they're almost acting as a realtor. It's kind of what we call a wholesaler. So they're not a licensed realtor, but they will get the property under contract. They'll write up a contract because they already have an end buyer. They have an end buyer that they're literally just going to wholesale the property. the double closing is going to happen in one day. They just get the property under contract, and they're selling it for a little bit more to an end buyer that they have found. That's how a lot of real estate investors, if you don't have any money to invest in real estate yourself, that's how a lot of them get started, because to be a wholesaler doesn't cost you anything. Of course, just your time. You have to go out and find the deals. You have to find an end buyer and stuff. But we do work with some lenders that provide transactional funding, meaning they will offer 100% financing as long as the double closing is going to happen the same day. So, you know, our borrower is going to be the wholesaler. So as long as the seller is going to sell to our borrower, that closing is going to happen, you know, that day. And then our wholesaler is going to sell to the end buyer, typically for residential use. It could be an investment for the end buyer as well, but that's going to happen the same day. So as you can see, the lender's 100% financing really isn't at risk. You know, they're getting their money back actually that day. Those lenders typically charge around 2 points. That's really the only fee. They just charge 2 points on the full amount that's been borrowed. That's really all they charge. Some of them have like a small $500 processing fee besides that. But yes, we can only provide 100% financing if it is transactional funding, and it's going to be exactly that situation. It's going to be a double closing in the same day. That's typically funding for someone who is a wholesaler. How many points are you charging me? We typically, and people are going to ask you that all the time, and it's hard to give them that answer because they've given you nothing about the deal. You don't know the loan amount. You don't. Obviously, our points are based off the loan amount. So, you know, if someone has $1 million deal, it's $1 million loan, we would only charge 1 point on that because 1 point is still a $10,000 fee, you know, and that's really what I strive for every loan, to get as close to that $10,000 fee as we can. Some loans I get higher than it, some I don't. I don't want to charge a borrower too many points because I don't want to scare them off. You know, we want the deal. But you just have to feel out every borrower and know where to price it. So what I typically tell people when they ask me that point question, how many points are you charging me, and I don't know everything about the deal, I don't know if they even qualify for a bank loan yet because I haven't gotten any information from them, I typically tell them we typically charge 2 points. Our points typically never surpass a $10,000 fee. But I kind of say that it's hard to tell you right now because I don't know everything about your transaction. You know, if this is a bank deal, you know, brokers can really only charge 1 point in a bank loan, maybe two if the lender will allow it. But, you know, if it's not a bank deal, then, you know, we're going to have to do some negotiating here. If you're not bankable for one little reason, that's when we know we kind of have you. I can charge them up to 5 points on a deal. Doesn't mean I'm going to. But, you know, if someone asks you how many points, I would just say we typically charge 2 points, but every deal is priced appropriately. It really depends on what you're trying to do. You know, I need more information from you first. Next question. Can I add my partner to the loan because they have better credit? You'll get this all the time. Commercial lenders hate this. They absolutely hate this. They'll have a borrower that their credit's just bad for whatever reason. I know a lot of you have already encountered borrowers that have bad credit. And they'll say, well, hey, my brother has 700-plus credit. Can't I just throw him on the title here, put him into my LLC somehow, and we just, you know, do the loan under him? You can't. No, it doesn't work like that. If they were married, if it was a spousal thing, yes, it can happen like that sometimes. You know, I'm actually doing a loan right now where the husband had bad credit. They own a 4-unit. The husband owned the 4-unit. The wife actually was not on title. Her credit was so much better than his that I could get her much better rates. So he added her to title months ago, and this lender, Vizio is the lender. We'll do a call with them. They only require 1 month of seasoning, meaning she only had to be on title for 1 month. So now we can do the loan under her because she has the seasoning requirement. He didn't legally have to buy into his company or his property because they are married. Now, if they're not married, if they're not married, and, you know, the same example I said, you know, a borrower is just trying to throw somebody else in their loan or put them on title, which, you know, means they own the property, it doesn't work. The borrower can add that other party to the title and stuff, but lenders are not stupid. They're going to pull, the title company's going to pull title. Even some of the lenders, you know, can pull certain things very quickly. They're going to see that the borrower was just thrown onto the property. They're going to ask the hard questions. Did this person legally buy into your LLC? Did they actually put cash and become a real partner? And the answer is always no. if they didn't, then you clearly just threw them one title just because they have better FICO and you don't meet our FICO requirement. And that happens a lot. People always say, well, I have somebody that, you know, if you have a situation where you have two partners that are actually partners, they actually have an LLC or some corporate entity together, or how many partners it is, doesn't matter. You will get into a situation where some of them may have good FICO and some of them may not. And it just depends on the lender if that's going to slide. Some lenders will just take the higher partner's FICO and just go off that and run with that on the loan. Other lenders won't look at it like that. The lower scored partner will actually bring the whole group down. Banks are very much like that. You know, they want everyone to have great FICO, typically 680 or higher, or they're not going to touch the loan. So banks, I mean, all lenders underwrite everyone involved in a commercial transaction that owns 20% or more of a company, just so everyone knows. All lenders do that. If you own 20% more of a company, the lender wants your financials, your tri-merge credit report, your personal financial statement, you know, tax returns, stuff on you. If some banks actually will underwrite anyone that owns 10% or more of a corporate entity. So it just depends on the lender, but 20% is really the rule out there. If someone does ask you, you know, can I add my partner to the loan because they have better credit, find out that partner is a spouse. Say typically the answer is no. There are always extenuating circumstances, but typically that answer is always no. You can't just put them on your loan because their credit's better and think the lender is going to underwrite the loan off of them when they clearly have not legally bought into this LLC or company or property. They don't have any real ownership. They don't have any skin in the game. So why would we underwrite the loan off of them? You know. So next question. Can I get bank rates and get cash out? People are going to ask you stuff like this or word it somehow like this. If somebody wants cash out, we never take those borrowers to a bank because banks tend sometimes to promise borrowers cash. Banks don't really like walking money anyways, as they call it. And we spoke to 44 Business Capital a couple weeks ago, who was one of our SBA lenders. He even said on the phone, Phil said on the phone, you know, we don't like that walking money. They just tell borrowers no. But a lot of times you'll get a borrower that has very good tax returns, very good FICO. They appear very bankable. But banks just don't do certain things. They don't like cash out. So what I always explain to borrowers, if you want cash out, we take you to our bank alternate stated program. I know those lenders are going to do the cash out. They're known for cash out. They're not at the last second going to cut the loan amount because you want cash out. They're okay with that. Yes, you are going to experience a little higher interest rates, but you'll be given a 30-year amortization instead of a 20-year amortization, where banks typically only offer 20-year AMs anyways. So you still have that extra 10 years of, you know, amortized payments. We do work with B2R is actually going to be doing a call for us soon. We do work with they're a very great blanket lender. They blanket loans for 1 to 4 units and multifamily properties 5 to 20 units nationwide. They actually do cash out, and they do offer very competitive terms. I have gotten LOIs from them in the 5 to 6% range with the 30-year amortization with cash out. Their business model is based on real estate investors want cash out so they can go buy more properties. So it that's still a little even higher interest rate than, you know, probably a bank would offer, 5 to 6%. But it's still a great interest rate. A 30-year amortization, and they're allowing the cash out. There's not going to be a problem with that. Now, they are still kind of a heavy document lender, but typically if someone's looking for cash out, we can't bring them to a bank. So if they're looking for cash out, I just explain to them, you know, I'm going to take you to a lender that I know can do it, that's not going to cut your loan amount right before closing. You've already spent money on the appraisal and stuff like that. I can't get it back. So, you know, we'll take it to a lender that can do that. Again, your rates are going to be a little higher than normal. It's not going to be ranked bank rates, typically. Okay, so I think we already talked about this, but, you know, you're going to have borrowers that say, you know, I have great income, great FICO, but they want to buy a vacant property, you know, and maybe it's an REO from a bank, a property a bank wants to get rid of. You know, maybe they want to fix and flip something. We just have to explain to them, you know, because a lot of times those borrowers are actually looking for bank rates. And so I always tell everyone a lot of what we do here is educating, but We have to explain to them, you know, in commercial, it's not just about you, Mr. and Mrs. Borrower. It is. We need to know your FICO scores, how much cash you have on hand, what your tax returns look like. It's also about the property. So if the property is not cash flowing, not producing any income, that's what permanent financing lenders do. They're always calculating the analysis of the cash flow. Everything's about cash flow, because that's what permanent financing is. We can't get you into a permanent loan just because you have great tax returns and great FICO. That's great. The property also needs to be cash flowing. So I explain that to them a lot. Some borrowers that are very bankable, like they don't want to hear that, but that is how it works, you know? So sometimes you'll have a borrower that realizes they can't get into a bank loan because they're looking to buy a vacant property, and they'll just decide not to buy the property, but that's fine. They should know the truth. So, So a lot of times borrowers will come to you and say, hey, I found a property I want to buy. Can you get me an LOI, a letter of intent from a direct lender tomorrow? Can you get me an LOI tomorrow? Or now, or could you get me one yesterday? I needed it yesterday. We can get an LOI very fast, but we need certain documents from them in order to do that. Lenders don't just issue letters of intent without substantial proof and documentation on a deal. So I can, I've been on several calls with a lot of you guys, and you've seen the documents that I'm emailing people on what we need from an LOI, but it is different from deal to deal. What we typically need, though, obviously general loan submission, personal financial statement on the borrower, tri-merge credit report, income and expense, year-to-date income and expense on the property, two years prior, rent roll if it's a rental property. Those are just the typical standard documents I need on a transaction to send to a lender so they can say, hey, this, at least I have some documentation on this, looks good. I can send you an LOI, which is an more official-looking document. It's not a term sheet. It's different than a term sheet. A term sheet doesn't typically come until right before closing, after all the third-party reports are back. A letter of intent is just a good faith letter from the lender to the borrower saying, based on the information you've given us, we like this deal. We are looking to lend. Here is our interest rate, our amortization, our terms, our fixed. Here's everything we can offer you. Some lenders even go above and beyond and will break down to the borrower all their closing costs. And I love when lenders do that. If the lender doesn't do it, we do it. And I like when they do that because they want the borrower to know exactly what they're getting into. It's expensive buying commercial real estate. And here's, you know, what you're going to have to come to the table with. So when you get to the closing table, you're not shocked. You understand the fees associated with buying commercial real estate. Again, that is the upfront appraisal. Brokerage fee if you're working with a broker. All lenders have fees as well. Even though banks don't charge points, a bank could charge a borrower a $10,000 processing fee. They can call it what they want to call it, but lenders all have fees, whether they're processing fees, origination fees, whatever they want to call it. And then, of course, on every commercial transaction, there's always title insurance. So I really like when they break down all the fees on the LOI to the borrower so they, again, they will make the borrower sign that, you know, as proof that they were aware of this is what it's going to take. If the lender doesn't do it, we will do it. But those are the standard documents I need for LOI. If it's any type of renovation loan or ground-up construction loan, I need the borrower's resume. I need to prove their experience level doing this, especially on a commercial renovation. Or no lender is going to jump at it. They want to see a nice resume with the borrower has experience doing this. That being said, on the 1-4 units renovations, we do have some lenders that will lend to first-time rehabbers, and we just talked to Lending Home a couple weeks ago. They do it. I believe RCN, ABL, they'll lend to first-time borrowers as well, but they're probably going to cut their LTV a little bit. What documents are needed for my loan? So I kind of actually just went over that. Those are the documents in the beginning I just asked. I just ask a borrower really for the documents I need from them up front to get an LOI, a letter of intent from a direct lender. From there, you know, the lender will issue me their full final stip list they want for closing. And I can obviously get that to the borrower. But it really is kind of the same. You know, that's just what we need to size up the deal. I need, of course, every borrower's tri-merge credit report, personal financial statement. Obviously, we need a loan submission. Year-to-date income and expense, past 2 years, rent roll. You know, if it's a purchase, and obviously we would need the purchase and sales agreement. If it's a purchase, the year-to-date income and expense in the previous 2 years actually need to come from the seller. And there's always this dance that buyers and sellers do in this industry, just so you guys know. I run into this every single day. You know, sellers of commercial real estate want buyers to come with some type of pre-approval. And I've said it a million times, but pre-approvals in commercial are much different than a residential pre-approval. It's, you need to submit proof of what this property is making to a lender for them to even issue an LOI. So it's always this dance because the seller doesn't want to give up the true financials on the property until they know the borrower is qualified for a commercial mortgage. But we can't get them even that if the seller doesn't give us what we need. So obviously, I'll always be involved in this situation. As anyways, just get me involved. I've talked to sellers several times to explain to them what we need, at least if they can just get us some type of like an investment memorandum or some type of marketing materials they're offering on the property that can at least tell us what the property is currently making. You know, in common sense, how could a borrower even put down an offer on a commercial property if they don't know what the property is truly producing, what the true income and expenses are in the property? The borrower has to make sure they can afford to pay the mortgage. So if we don't know the true income and expenses, you know, I'll be telling your borrowers, but, you know, no one can put in a true offer anyways, you know, so they have to give that to us. And that's basically it. You know, the rest just depends on the loan. If it's a bank loan, obviously we'll need tax returns. If it's a stated loan, we won't. Standard other documents we always need on a loan, copies of all the leases, of course, payoff balance if there's a payoff, a lender that needs to be paid off. Obviously, we need a complete title insurance report. We need complete property coverage, and the lender has to be updated as the additional insured, the new lender. So there are standard documents that you're always going to have on every commercial transaction, and I think we pretty much went over those. So, guys, those are really kind of just the questions I wrote down that people are typically going to ask you when you're out and about. But I just want to open up right now to see if anyone has any questions, or if you are getting asked other things as you are out there, please let me know. Hey guys, if anyone has any questions or wants to add anything about what you've kind of been being asked out there, I'd love to answer them.
I'm ready to fire away. If I may, Megan, it's John.
Go ahead, John.
This just kind of refers to what you and I went back and forth with the other day about the tax assessment on the property. When the people are doing the single-family residence, this commercial loan, I've had some of the realtors, the first question they asked me was, how does the tax assessment work? And, you know, like you explained, it still stays on the residential, even though it's a commercial loan. And I think it's important for people to know, because I think it's a question they're going to get from the realtors.
Yeah, and you know what? The realtor could really honestly answer that question themselves. They could just call the local county or figure out who does the taxes there. But I've never heard of a property being taxed differently just because it's being, you know, so say, you know, you live in a residential subdivision, you know, if a home is being used as a rental property, it's still a residential home. You know, so just because it's being rented out and being for investment uses doesn't mean the county is going to come around and charge you more in taxes, you know?
Right. So
the taxes on the property are typically the taxes on the property.
Right. So the single-family non-owner occupied is not an automatic consideration as a commercial loan. It's only how the lender considers it.
I'm sorry. Can you say that again?
A single-family property, if it's non-owner occupied, of course, is not automatically considered as a commercial loan. It's only considered as a commercial loan by the lender.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Good way to word that. Yeah, it's only considered a commercial loan to the lender because, you know, the county would have no idea if there's a residential loan or a commercial loan on it. You know, but the lender, since the borrower is using this for investment purposes, that's why the lender is allowed to do a commercial loan on it.
Right. And then I had a question as well, too, if I may.
Go ahead. Keep bringing it.
Most of our loans are stated loans, of course. And on a lot of the loans, the people don't even need tax documents. So if we see a situation where we know it's going to be stated because of the person's FICO or the overall situation, are we still going to ask them for their last 2 year taxes up front? Do we still want to see those, even if we're not required to give those to the lenders?
No, good question. No, I don't ask them for that. If I can, that's why the only thing the size of a deal, I always only just ask for a loan submission so I know what's going on, their tri-merge credit report and personal financial statement. Once I can see those two documents and see what's going on, I can tell them exactly here's what you're going to qualify for, and of course based on what they're looking to do. So if I know it's going to be a stated loan because, you know, say their FICO is like a 630, 640, they're right in between there. They're not quite bankable yet, you know, but again, they can't, they don't have to go hard money if they don't want to, of course. I will hit them back with the program. Everyone should have the product sheet. If you don't have it, please email me. I will send it to you. But I'll hit them back with, here's the program we can offer you, and I'll explain why. You've already explained to them on the phone after they've talked to me, you know, hey, here's what we can do for you, and here's what you qualify for, why. So I always give them a why. But no, I won't ask for their personal tax returns because I don't need them, you know?
Okay, right. That's what I thought. But I know it's kind of a standard, you know, if we're telling people up front the standard type of documents we need for most loans, we always kind of start with those documents being included.
Yeah. So those lenders, that I know if someone can, you know, if obviously if they have a property that's producing income, I know they can go into a stated loan. I won't ever ask for them. I don't ever ask for anyone's tax returns up front unless they want a bank loan. If they clearly want a bank loan or, you know, an SBA loan or a conventional loan, then I will ask for your tax returns because those lenders always do. Some banks, they won't even look at your file until you send them everything. So those are the only SIP lists that I'll ever issue that are going to be very, very complete. Like almost every document I'm going to have on there that they need to give me is really what's going to be to close the loan. But if it's not a bank deal, I don't ever ask for tax returns. And so you know, though, John, I'm glad you brought that up. There are some hard money lenders out there that do want tax returns. And they don't care really if the borrower is claiming losses or stuff on them. That's not their motive. They want to know that the borrower is filing taxes. Because if the borrower is they're not filing taxes, you know, eventually they're going to get in trouble with the IRS. They don't want to lend to a borrower that's not filing taxes. Now, some of our borrowers actually have to go into stated loans because they have not been filing taxes over the past couple of years, whatever their reason is. You know, there's multiple reasons I've heard out there. they just didn't get around to it, you know? Okay. So if someone is not filing taxes, or if someone's ever, you know, hesitant about that, I would always just ask them, you know, if you're not filing taxes, I have to put you into a program where the lender does not ask for tax returns. And just so you know, our stated lenders actually never do follow up and check even if they are filing taxes, which is very risky because, you know, if they're not filing taxes, eventually there's going to be some repercussions to not filing taxes.
Well, don't they all ask for the 4506T?
How can I find any better?
Not a stated lender.
Can I find any better?
Oh, okay. If you're in the area, if you don't mind just muting the phone until unless you have questions. Yeah, our stated lenders never ask for 4506T. They never even verify to see if the borrower is filing corporate or personal taxes. So I know it's crazy. I know, but these lenders are for certain individuals out there. You know?
I just wonder if they had a way to verify without seeing the taxes if there was any IRS tax lien, because if there are, they're not going to touch the loan.
I mean, our stated lenders will. I just did a deal not too long ago where the borrower, first of all, our stated lenders will touch you if you have a tax lien or an IRS issue. That's okay. So it's just if you're getting cash out to pay off those things, you know, obviously your LTV on your property just needs to work, you know?
Right.
So as long as the property has enough equity in it where I can pull that cash out, that's okay. I actually did the problem is when you don't file taxes, in order to, you can't even get a payoff balance from the IRS until you start filing again. So if you're like on the run still, not filing, you don't actually know how much you actually owe the IRS until you resurface. You know, and it's a process. So I just did a deal the beginning of this year in March for a gentleman in Massachusetts. He had a 8-unit strip mall, and his father passed away recently, and a couple years ago, he just couldn't get it together. He couldn't file taxes. He kind of walked away from life for a little bit. But, you know, I explained to him, you know, I said, the lender may ask us for a payoff balance on what do you owe the IRS, you know, and I got deep into it with him and his accountant. And his accountant was like, we can't even tell you what we owe the IRS. They were estimating it was $50,000. But he's like, until he files again and gets on their radar again, we won't actually even get a payoff balance until then. So Apex actually was the lender on that file. They let that slide. But they could have very well came back and said, hey, if he's not giving us official payoff balance, we're not giving you $50K. You may owe the IRS $100K. And that didn't do any dent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the lender and really the what side of the bed they kind of wake up on that day. But as long as their LTV is okay, we can definitely get them money for tax liens and IRS issues.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, no, there are hard money lenders that, you know, again, will ask for tax returns, like I told you, because they want to make sure that the borrower is filing. And some of them will do 45-6 OTs. RCN, very well known for that. I've closed a couple of deals with RCN. They always have, because, see, someone can go onto the IRS.gov website and create a tax return, but they actually never press submit and file it. So that happens a lot, actually, sometimes. And I had a deal with Cherrywood, actually, 3 years ago or something, where the borrower gave me their tax returns. I gave them to Cherrywood, and then all of a sudden Neil came back to me and was like, you know, this borrower you're working with, he never even filed his tax return. I was like, how do you know? He's like, we just ran a 4506T on him, and the IRS doesn't have him. So lenders can find out anything, and that's what I always tell borrowers. Whatever, you have to tell me all the tricks you're trying to play so I can tell you how it can work. If you don't tell me all the tricks, what's going to happen is you're going to think the lender can do this because you're not giving them the full story, and then you start going down this underwriting road with them, and you're spending money on third-party reports and appraisals and stuff you can't get back, and all of a sudden the deal dies in underwriting.
That's wasting time.
Yeah, we're wasting your time, wasting your money. It's, you know, I always tell the bar, it's your money, you know? And it's our time, of course, but it's still their money. So just everything that's going on, and we can certainly help you. We have lenders for basically almost every single situation. You know, it just, you know, you have to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John, did you want to throw in anything else? Anything else people are asking you out there? Or
I did have one other quick question for you.
Go ahead.
On the, I think there's a huge market, particularly here in the Denver area, for single-family residents going into LLCs. And I'm just wondering if you've got any type of tie-up with either a tax lawyer or an accountant where we can show people what the advantages of underwriting a loan through an LLC, taking the interest deductions from the LLC on the payments made off to the bank, tax protection on one side, and also asset protection on the other, keeping out of the property that somebody wishes to purchase, keeping it out of their personal name. And I'm just wondering if we have any tie-ups with any accountants or lawyers that have actually, you know, got something put together where they say this could be a really good program for people that are looking to do this. And if you want to get this single-family residence because it's cash flowing well and you can get a good purchase price on it, and you go into an LLC, not only are you going to get all the good cash flow, blah, 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 you're going to get the good tax deductions and asset protection. And I'm just wondering if we kind of have an overall plan that we could highlight that.
Yeah, so actually we do have I know some of our IAPs actually are accountants. There's a IAP we have, his name's Chris Pop. He actually is an accountant. So I don't have like any official document, just so you know, that kind of shows maybe someone the tax advantages or something to that. And I personally, I'm not an accountant, so I don't need the tax advantages. What I tell people typically when they ask me, do I have to close an LLC or not on a 1-4 unit transaction? It just depends on the lender. Some lenders will require a borrower close in an LLC. Some lenders won't, actually. You don't have to. So it's really just a personal preference with the borrower. I can tell you, though, I've worked with hundreds of real estate investors. It's been actually more than that. But I've touched thousands of real estate investors just networking. I've actually intimately interacted with hundreds of them. Most real estate investors are closing in an LLC or some type of corporate entity because, you know, if you think about it, you know, say they hit someone and, you know, they get sued or something happens and they personally get sued, if that property is under them personally, that's technically their personal asset that someone could attack. Yeah. So if if they do close in an LLC, you know, it just gives them more added protection that this is an investment property. Someone would have to sue that company then to attack
right.
that asset. So I don't know the tax advantages or the, you know, I don't know like the tax advantages associated with something like that, but that's kind of how I do explain it to people, and that's typically why people do that. A lot of state investors will, so say they have I just did a deal, the borrower had a two-unit, and he owned the two, it was an investment property, but it was actually owned in his personal name, and this was in Philadelphia again. The new lender was requiring him to close in an LLC, because they just was their requirement. He didn't want to do, I mean, I had to convince him to do it. It was the only way the deal was going to get done. But he didn't want to transfer it over to an LLC because then he had to pay a transfer tax from the city of Philadelphia. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they just close in an LLC from the get-go, it's just much better because that's really how commercial lenders want to see it. It just, though, depends from lender to lender and from state to state because different states have certain requirements on commercial loans, but typically most commercial transactions, the borrower is closing in a corporate entity. That's not always the case, though. I definitely have borrowers that do close in their personal names, and that's okay to the lenders.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, but it's much better from a long-term estate planning point of view to be in an LLC. So
I think it's better for them legally, you know, like
yeah,
you know,
course.
Just from protection-wise. But I mean, I'm not a lawyer either. I've just figured that out. You know, I mean, I'm just being thrown in this business. Just, yeah, I've learned from other real estate investors out there the reason why they're closing corporate entities is just because of that liability reason.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. It's very important.
Yep.
Good. Thank you.
Of course, John. Guys, does anyone have any other questions they wanted to add to the call at all? Okay, guys. Oh, one second.
Megan?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I just want to talk as far as interest rate, when we're starting to work with a borrower, should we just kind of, you know, let him know at first, you know, we need to gather information about him and the loan and what he wants to do before we can really spit out a rate?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people will just kind of like it, you know, just kind of jump at you like, what's my rate or what's your rate, you know? And it's like, you know, you just have to kind of slow roll them like, you know, it doesn't work like that. I first need to know what your tri-merge credit scores are. I need to know how much cash you have on hand. I need to know about the deal so I can tell you what type of lender would do this. And then I can give them some general rates and terms.
Sure.
But, yeah, we need information from them. So what I typically just say is if you get a borrower like that and they don't want to submit any documents, they just want to talk about rates and terms, and sometimes there are borrowers out there like that, that's fine. Just get me on the phone with them. Let's just set up a call with them. I'll just ask them the questions, where are your tri-merge credit scores, you know, how much cash you have on hand, what are you trying to do, and I'll just give them a range.
Do you think it would be okay to give them that rate sheet that you have, Megan, or is that just too much adding to confusion?
No, you can and I'm going to update that rate sheet just so you guys know. But you can certainly
Excel, send
me,
please.
yeah. No, I'll send. It's going to be in Excel. Don't worry. I'm going to update that. But yes, you can certainly give them the rate matrix. Give them the product sheet. You know, the product sheet is just a more detailed version of every program, and the product sheet is really something for you know the internal reps, so you guys can see every single thing about the deal, like the interest rates, the LTVs, the fixed terms associated with the deal, the total amortization of the loan, the weird funky things that lender has. I always put in the special notes, the specials, you know, their lending territory. So it just depends what type of borrower you get a hold of. The borrowers are different. Some borrowers want as much information as you can possibly give them up front. They want to know everything, and that product sheet's still okay to send to a borrower. Other borrowers just, you know, the rate matrix is probably better for them. That the product sheet may be too much. As you guys are going out to events and stuff, take that product sheet with you, though. You know, just print out like maybe one or two copies. Don't give them out. Just tell people they can look through them. These are the majority of the programs we offer. I can't put every single program on there that we offer because that thing would quickly start turning into 100 pages. It used to be much longer at one point, and I cut back a lot of stuff because it was just too much. You know, it was just too much. I was going to lose someone even looking through it. So just tell people, here is the general bank programs, bank alternate, temporary programs we offer. It's not every program because we can't put every single program on there again. It would take forever. But it is the majority of the programs on there. And, you know, we definitely have access to other programs as well. So. All right, guys. I think we've been on the call for an hour. So did anyone have any quick questions at all? All right. What I'm going to do is thank you, guys. Thanks to everyone who was on the call. I know we were on this. We went a little longer than usual today. But if you do think of any questions about the training or any questions anyone's ever asking you, get me involved. You can just, you know, copy me on the email and say, Megan will get back to you. She oversees all of our commercial loans, whatever. Or obviously call me, text me, anything. So I will send out the training to everyone, and everyone have a great weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Megan.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.